Welcome back, everybody. It's Jack Graham along with John Peterson for, I don't know what this is, John, 120
something?
121. First podcast of We Talk Photo. And today we have, we've done so many of these that we're starting to have some repeat people back who we really enjoyed having on. And today we have a really, really special guest. And, you know, we have this list. And I ran into Rick in the airport about a week and a half ago in Sitka, Alaska, of all places. But we talked a little bit, and we agreed that Rick agreed to come on with us. Thank you, Rick. But Rick Salmon is here with us from New York. Rick, welcome. Thank you for being here and taking some time. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's so great to see you up there. I had a great time. I know you had a great time. The bald eagles were great. We didn't see too many whales. But anyway, it's good to see you guys again. And thanks so much for having me on the show. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, as always.
Yeah, we were lucky. We there was a whole pod of orcas. And I'm told it was earlier than that. And they popped up and down. And they actually kind of danced like the Rockettes. So like six of them got up at the same time. And
oh, man.
It was a gift. But, you know, it's such a beautiful place up there. You know, we all found ourselves taking, you know, landscape shots from the boat. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was just glorious. And no, it was a good time. It was good to see you in the airport. And I'm glad, you know, there's a reason for everything. And kind of that's what precipitated getting you back as soon as we can. And, you know, so what do you, you know, I mean, we all kind of know each other. We run into each other in the field, and we kind of know what each other's doing. But the folks who are listening don't. So what do you tell everybody what you're up to these days?
Well, I'm up to, like, a lot of things. I ride my bike. I ride my bike every day. I go walking every day. I take a nap every day. I have happy hour every day. And in between that, I think this year I've recorded for Kelby One with the live classes. I have about 5 or 8 classes. I have a new book out. It's called How to Make Money When You're Sleeping, which is my
special. I actually have that book. I bought one.
Well,
it's a great book.
I would have sent it to you, but
it's a great book, and I'm not sleeping a lot anymore, so it's really helping.
Well, it's about passive income, and I got the idea from Warren Buffett. As you guys know, every successful photographer out there is a good business person.
Have to be.
Yeah.
Moose Peterson, good business person. Art Wolf, good business person. You guys, great business people. You have to be. So I follow the business stories all the time, and Warren Buffett was quoted by saying, he said, if you don't learn how to make money when you're sleeping, you're going to have to work until you're dead. And I got the idea for this. So it's all about how photographers can generate passive income, whether it's through affiliate programs, or through like programs like Buy Me a Coffee, doing online classes, writing books. So this is really the key. So like I said, I'm a specialist on it. So why this is why I can go bike riding and take a nap and have happy hour.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you have to do it. The stock business, as you know, is gone. And, you know, the print business, everybody can take the photograph now, they think.
So yeah.
It's not what it was. So, you know, we have to, this is our business. And this is what we do. And,
Well, as Jack and I were talking earlier, it's just multiple income streams.
You're right.
This
is the key.
Passive or actively, it's still just multiple income streams because any one of them in the photography business today doesn't support living. So you have to combine multiples of these to make a go as a pro.
Well, you're 100% right. It's like your investments. You don't want to just invest in one stock.
Right.
You don't want to
just
have one bond. So I tell people my specialty is not specializing because I diversify. I do studio photography. I do landscape. I do travel. I do this. I teach. I write books. I do podcasts. I do online training. I do private lessons. I do workshops. Do photo tours. So you have to diversify and get into AI and understand AI, which is, I know, a controversial thing, but it's here to stay.
Yeah.
And when I got into AI, this could be a whole podcast. And I don't know if you guys saw it, but in August, last August, 2023, when I started posting AI pictures, some well-known pros called me names that I wouldn't even
missed that. I didn't see that.
I wouldn't even tell Jack at the airport in Alaska. It was so bad. Now it's calmed down, but the thing is, they didn't understand it. They say, "Oh, Salmon, you're ripping off. If I post a picture of a zebra by a watering hole that I created in Midjourney, oh, you're ripping off someone's picture." They didn't understand that. No way on the planet are you ripping off someone's picture.
Oh, and you're saying what you did. I mean, it's not.
I always do that.
Yeah, you're not trying to. You know, if you go back to Art Wolf's book, was it
Migration.
Yeah. I mean, he and Galen got into it for forever, going back and forth. And Art said, "Here's what I did. I cloned zebras in this picture."
Yeah.
Okay. What? Just say what you did. Have fun. Have a good time.
Well, that's it. You have fun, people. These people. You mentioned the stock before, that, you know, that the stock business, John mentioned that the stock business is dead. It is, and the people who are worried about AI are the stock photographers and the art designers. Because, you know, I could type in, you know, black and white picture up in Alaska with the whale's tail with the water dripping off it, with the out of focus trees in the background and nice waves and, you know, And a professional photographer in a maroon T-shirt with glasses, and it would do it. Yeah. But I say, you know, my mother said honesty is the best policy, and this is really true. I think we have to say it, but you know, it's just like the only people who care about noise in a picture are professional photographers. No one else gives a damn, right? Right. So it's the same thing about AI. No one. No one cares if it's AI.
Remember when HDR got really popular, when it was before the software was really good?
Yeah.
And people were up in arms about that. And I tell people, if you read the history of photography, when color film appeared, it was blasphemy. They were almost riots. It was like the Rite of Spring with Stravinsky. People were screaming about it. They said, how could this be? It's an abomination.
Yeah, it is. But Rick, let me just ask you real quick. I mean, without going too deep in the AI world, that, you know, where's that? Is there a distinction for you between photography and digital art? And do you think about those things differently when you're doing photography versus AI creation?
Well, to answer the question, kind of like, so for like two or three, Susan and I actually have a book on AI. It's called, you can look it up on Amazon, it's called Wild Wanderers. And it's about like different chapters, like we have animals from Africa in Antarctica. So we have Antarctica icebergs with the animals on it. We have animals from Costa Rica, you know, up in Maine. And so we transport all these animals. And the book has a conservation message because we talk about how the animals, you know, adapt and what, to these different environments, what they learn in the different environments. So on the front of the book, it says an AI wildlife fantasy. Okay? So when we're doing that, I think about that it's AI. So I there is distinction, of course, because after I published that, Susan and I published that book, every time I publish a picture, like the bald eagle picture I sent you, people say, is that AI? So they're kind of teasing, but they're also trying, it doesn't really matter. You know, if someone likes it, they like it. If they don't like it, you know, and if I could just throw one more thing in here. People who are against AI, I say, well, then you hate Eric Clapton and you hate Santana, because if they unplug their guitars into their artificially intelligent amps and computers who generate sounds that sound nothing like the twanging of a string on a guitar, you should be against all AI.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, again, John, good point. We don't want to beat this up, but once this AI thing calms down, and it'll calm, it's going to settle itself, and it'll figure it out.
Right.
You do what you want. Say, here's what I did. It could be photo art. It could, whatever you want to call it. Here's what it is. If you like it, good. If you don't like it, I have other images you can look at.
Again, it's only the people like about the noise. The only ones who care are photographers. You know, my neighbors down the street, they don't care if I have a picture of a bald eagle created in AI or this, or, you know, or if I spent you know, a week in Africa and 3 days to get a week in Alaska and 3 days to get there.
But the reason these commercial guys are upset about it is it's going to put some people out of work.
Well, it's going to put a lot of people out of work, but if you don't understand it, then you're going to be totally dead.
Well, they should read your book on how to make money when they sleep.
They should.
That would solve the problem. Okay, so you're like James Brown, man. You're like the hardest working guy in this business.
You know what I mean? I feel good.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what the thing is? I think it might be chemical.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding, because or it's something else. Because I can't wait to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
I jump out of bed, you know. I have 47. Next week I'll have done 47 Kelby One classes.
Wow.
In 16 years, and wow. I want to go down there next year, record 3 classes that have a total of 50. I have 44. Oh, here's the book, by the way.
Yep.
I have 44 books. And for those who are listening, I have a lot of publishers. My best publisher is Amazon.
Yeah.
This is so profitable. If people have a book idea, they could just go on, just do a search, publish your book on Amazon, on the Kindle store. You get 70%. On the book. Now, they don't give you an advance, but they give you 70% of a book. And you can check every day. Like, if you bought a book right...
That's what you get from a publisher.
It's way more. And you could check every day. And if you guys bought 2 books right now, I'd go on the Kindle app and I'd see it right away. So you could get addicted to that, by the way.
Yeah.
But you could... So I would recommend for your listeners, if you have a book idea, publish it. I know a guy who could put it together for you. He charges me, I think, $1,200 to put together, you know, the whole book. All I do is I send him the pictures, the text, and the cover images. He puts it together. 2 weeks later, if you don't do a lot of editing, it's on Amazon.
Hmm.
No, this is so. I have 5 books on Amazon. That's my new publisher.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not is right. I mean, your pictures do, as you guys know, your pictures do you no good sitting on your hard drive. You know, I have a lot of hard drive in those cabinets behind me. But what good are they? So if I have an idea, I'm going to do a book. And if it doesn't do well, you know, I'm out of a few bucks.
It's good for people to do projects. So they can do a little. And it doesn't have to be a thick book. They could do a 20-page book. You know, a little nice little book, and
that's right. Look, it could be a 20-page book that you sell for $2.99.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is this, for your listeners, cross promoting is really good. So, like in my Kelby One classes, I promote my books. In my books, I promote the Kelby One classes. In my books, I promote my other books. In the books, I promote the workshops. So, cross promotion is really, really important, as you know.
Well, you know what I think this comes from, Rick? You and I, you know, I made a living for about 20 years in the music business in New York. And, you know, the gigs that we like to play, the jazz gigs and the cool rock stuff that you did and whatever, you had to play crap jobs to be able to afford to play the good stuff.
Well...
And I'm not saying writing a book and doing Amazon is a crap thing to do. I don't mean that. But you have to do other things in order to be able to travel and go to new places and function as a working photographer. You just have to do it.
Jack, this is exactly the advice I gave my son when he complained about one of his early jobs. He's a Harvard professor right now, so it worked out. He teaches finance. I'm glad he didn't follow in my footsteps. But I told him when he was growing up, I said, Marco, you have to do what you don't want to do the things you want to do. Sure. You think Art Wolf just goes, well, maybe now he can, just flies around the world and takes pictures? This guy works his butt off, right? I think he told me once he works on like 7 books at one time.
Yeah, we had him on about a month ago. I think he's working on 4 books now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, I think working on a book is... having a goal is really important. My wife and I talk about this all the time. So many photographers and some of your listeners may be in this boat. They don't know what to do with their pictures. I know a great photographer. She does lives not far from us. She never looks at her. After a trip, she doesn't look at her pictures for like months. She doesn't know what to do. So I think having a book, having a project, having a website, doing something with your pictures to share. And I think sharing on social media is really good because you get feedback.
Well, I don't know about you, but I started doing this before the internet. and it was a minefield. And there's so many ways to do things. And in that book, and it's a great book, and everybody should have that book to make money while you're sleeping, because it's a Bible. I mean, I'm telling you, it's.
Thank you.
You've done the legwork for people. I mean, you have.
Well, I've been around a little while, like you.
Well, no, but I mean, what you've done is you've told people how to do this, and you've saved a lot of time, people a lot of time. And it's really a good book. So, okay, so books, workshops. What are you doing in workshops?
Well, they're kind of like photo tours now, going to the high Arctic with Poseidon Adventures. I'm the photo pro, one of the photo pros, going to Antarctica, Falklands, and South Georgia later this year, going to Mongolia, going to Eric Kuhner from Kelby One is doing a Milky Way workshop out in the Badlands. That'll be fun.
Wow.
So I like to keep busy. I'm not the guy who's going to sit. You are never going to see me on a beach in Cancun.
Yeah.
with a margarita.
Yeah.
You'll see me at the bar. You'll see me at the bar with a margarita.
I don't think there are a lot of people like us that, I mean, we have to go, I mean, we get cooped up. You're writing a book. You got, I mean, you get cooped up in the office for a couple of days. You're probably like a caged animal.
A little crazy.
Well, actually, I like writing. I think writing is a perfect thing for a neurotic person because you could sit there all day and talk to yourself.
Yeah. That's true. That is true.
No, but I do like writing. People say about my books, they say, oh, it sounds just like you. And I don't try to be pretentious, use big words or anything. I just write like I talk.
Yeah,
right from the heart.
So, iPhone, you're doing some iPhone things?
Yes. Last year, for the first time, I took the iPhone only to Morocco and got amazing pictures. I have an iPhone site. It's called the iPhone Photo Experience.
So you took a whole international trip, and the only camera you brought was the iPhone.
Yes.
Just to reinforce that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, if you go to the iPhone Photo Experience and click on my Morocco gallery. So people thought I was nuts, but they really thought I was nuts when I went last year to South Georgia, the Falklands, and Antarctica with only my iPhone and my Samsung S23. And the reason I took the S23 is because it has a 10x lens. So on that, it's a 230mm lens. Now, even if the animal, so if you get a full frame shot, with 230 with the upsizing programs now, I can make that 460, right? With the upsizing programs, it's amazing what we can do. And I got some shots down there that people were really surprised that I got with just these smartphones.
Are you still a Canon shooter?
No, I switched to Sony. I upgraded to Sony when I was up in Alaska. People think I switched because the autofocusing is like super with the bird tracking. I think it's superior to some cameras out there. The uncompressed RAW files, the picture that I sent you guys earlier of a bald eagle with its talons out, which was banded, had it escaped from a rehabilitation center. Oh, they released it from a rehabilitation center. That animal filled about 10% of the frame. And with the upsizing programs and everything, I just made a 17x22-inch print on my Epson printer over here.
I heard that Canon and Apple are either they're working together or they're talking about working together. And I think if Apple works with a Sony or a Canon or a Nikon, and really, I got to tell you, a couple of years, the camera systems that we're carrying around, the non-iPhone camera systems, this may be the last one I ever own. because it's going where you're taking where you're.
The Samsung Galaxy S23 Ultra with the 10x lens is amazing. Now, what's really interesting is the Galaxy S24, they took out the 10x lens. I don't know why they did it. They said, the customers didn't need it. But I have the reflex lenses, the 2x lenses for the iPhone that screw on. And those reflex lenses are really good. But unless you go into Alaska to photograph bald eagles, like when we go to Mongolia this year, only the iPhone and the S23. Go to Antarctica again this year, iPhone. Well, because the animals come close in Antarctica, as you know. So I think for wildlife and sports, people are going to need the big cameras and the big lenses. But what we're doing, and we went to Cuba. We went to Cuba with only the iPhone.
Probably a good move.
Oh, it was amazing.
Security was, you know.
I know. Cuba was amazing. Again, on this iPhone photo experience, if you go to the Cuba gallery, there'd be no reason at all to take a big camera.
The other thing, too, is it's less intimidating for the people.
That's an excellent point. And also, with the iPhone, the wide-angle lens, to refresh my memory, is a 13 millimeter. So you have from... I have just the 14, so I have 13 to 77 millimeters. What else do you need for street shooting?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the lesson in all of this is it doesn't really matter what kind of gear you have.
Well, John, you still have to take the picture.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but the gear,
it's up here. It's up here. It's 6 inches.
And we would talk, well, you know what Ansel Adams said? He said your best accessory is the 12 inches that's behind the camera.
Right.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, we were in Alaska, and it was really funny. I told all the people before, practice. I practiced photographing squirrels in my backyard. I photographing Canada geese, you know, on the pond in our backyard and by the river. I went to the Bronx Zoo and practiced. And my camera beat my Sony A1. And 200 600 millimeter lens became like a point and shoot camera. Yep. And for the first 2 days, I would say several people on the boat missed the shots because they didn't practice. And you have to practice. And then it was really interesting. One guy was getting great shots, and he had like the top of the line. He had a top of the line Canon camera. And another guy was there, and he didn't have the top-of-the-line camera. So he said to the guy who had the top-of-the-line camera, he says, when I get back, I'm going to order that camera because you're getting great shots.
Yeah, right.
It's practice, practice, practice.
No, people get frustrated with their gear, and they should get frustrated with themselves.
Yeah.
Rick, when I was playing the trumpet, I used to go down to Giardinelli's on 46th Street to buy valve oil and stuff, you know, and I walk in, and I use the same mouthpiece I used in 11th grade.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Right.
I go in there, the kids are trying new mouthpieces. I want to try this one. I said, what are you people doing? I said, do you use your mouthpiece at work? Go home and practice. You're wasting your time here. How do you get to Carnegie Hall, Rick?
Yeah, you practice. You play trumpet. Did you play Dexter Gordon's Song for My Father?
It's Horace Silver.
Horace Silver, sorry, yeah. Horace Silver.
He was on a record.
What?
Yeah, he was on a record. That song is one of the highest sampled tunes in the history of music. Hip-hop guys have sampled that like crazy.
I love playing that. I think I play in F.
I couldn't remember, but...
Yeah, I play in F and it goes down.
Practicing.
It's great to jam to, right? It's one key.
Yeah, yeah. But you got to practice.
Well, you do, you know, when I go away, like on that trip, I lose my calluses. Yeah. But anyway, people probably aren't interested in that. But the point is, I have a fighter pilot friend. He's a Top Gun instructor, and he talks about being in the control in the cockpit. You can see my hand, right?
Right.
Yeah. And he teaches. He says, okay, you're in the cockpit. And you're flying an F whatever it is, F-18, I don't know the numbers. And you're flying upside down or whatever. And you have like, you know, 8 buttons on the thing. And if you're looking out the window and looking at your radar, you can't be looking down to see what button you're pressing. So this is a Top Gun instructor, and now he's a great photographer, Hal Schmidt. So he says it's the same thing with your cameras. You have to know your machine so well that you could just concentrate on what Edward Weston said. You know, composition is the strongest way of seeing. And
the last podcast we recorded, we talked about that, John, remember, the other day?
Yep.
And I always make the comment, when a pianist sees, like in the third line, there's a crosshand coming up, you think that, oh my God, there's a crosshand. No.
No.
They know what's coming up because they practice. It's second nature. You have to be in the creative zone. You can't be worried about how the rest of the stuff works.
Well, you know, along this note, because I really love talking about this, I think photographers, and I think I never talked about this with Art Wolf, but I think he might agree, because he's an unbelievable wildlife photographer. We have to be like story. We have to be like fortune tellers, right? We have to be able to see into the future, like what's gonna happen. And you know, like with that whale tail picture, you knew the whale was gonna go up. You probably wanted the moment with the drip and stuff like that. So, and that comes by practicing too. The other thing I think we need to have is what's called situational awareness, which is what the fighter pilot, my friend, also talks about. That, you know, he's in the cockpit, he has to be aware of everything. Yep. And if you're photographing on that whale's tail there, you also have to be, I'm sure you're aware of that there might be something going on in the background, behind you. Or you have to be listening. Listening is one of the things a lot of photographers don't do, and that's a key, right?
Right. As you were talking, Rick, about situational awareness, the one thing that also clicked in my head was that if our brain power is directed at using our camera, using our tool, trying to figure out how to get this setting and that setting and everything else, we don't have enough computing power to have situational awareness. We're focused on our camera, not our environment and our subject and the stories that are being told in front of us. So another evidence for practicing and developing muscle memory and all that kind of good stuff.
You have to put the time in, because what do you want to do when you go to Alaska? You want to have fun.
You want to enjoy the experience. Yep.
But, you know, along with the practicing, taking pictures, I think we also have to practice in Photoshop and Lightroom to know, okay, if I'm photographing that bald eagle, I know I have to underexpose a little so the white feathers aren't blown out, but I know I could do this and that in Photoshop and Lightroom, blur the background, use the clone stamp tool. So we really have to not only practice taking pictures, we have to keep in our... Ansel Adams used a creative visualization, you know. Mm-hmm. He looked at a scene and said, okay, I know I'm going to do this, I know I'm going to do that, I know I'm going to do this.
Yep. Okay, so iPhone... Do you do specific iPhone workshops a lot, like you did in Alaska, just a few?
Alaska was actually, you know, the big camera photo tour. But I do private lessons here in New York, and for Kelby One, they just finished an iPhone photography conference, and it was one of their most successful conferences. You know, they do Lightroom conferences, they do Photoshop World, they do wildlife conferences, they do gear. So to your point, Jack, you said before that this might be the future. So many people are interested in learning how to take pictures with their smartphone.
John, of all the workshops that you and I have done now together, of all the people that were there, I guarantee you that 90% of them had their iPhone in their pocket and were taking maybe documentary photographs stuff when they really, if they knew what they were doing, could have really maybe taken really better photographs.
Oh, yeah. I still remember when we did one of the Katmai Bear workshops, there was a woman that just had nothing but her iPhone, and it worked just fine.
I think she was from China?
No. She was American with her husband. But you know, the animals were so close and the iPhone just did a wonderful job. So that's what she shot with.
Well, the new one with the 5X lens is good. I would have bought it, but I'm waiting for, you know, I really wanted the 10X lens.
Yeah.
So what's in the future, Rick? What are you going to be 5 years from now?
5 years from now, I'll be 78. So I hope to be doing basically what I'm doing now.
Wow.
You know, me too. I'm a year, believe it or not, I was born in 52, so I'm maybe a year younger than you.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, people ask, when are you going to retire? And I kid John all the time. So, you know, if something comes up, I go, I've had it. This is
That's what he told me today. I'm retiring.
Yeah, yeah. But then something happens and you get all invigorated and, you know, I've got another, John's going to be an Olympic next week. I've got something kind of, I can't wait to go again.
Well, I think we need diversity in our life too. Like I said, I ride my bike, I walk and I row every day in the pond. But I take pictures, I play music. I just think diversifying, it's good for the mind, body, and soul.
It is. It is. John, what are we leaving out?
Well, what I want to know, Rick, since you're a big music guy, what's your desert island album? The one album that you would bring on a desert island?
Well, right now, I play in a lot of bossa music. I love bossa nova music, and I like the Latin music. So,
you listen to records at all?
LPs?
Listen to vinyl?
No. Okay. I had a collection. I'm sorry I got rid of it, but I had a collection. You know, now everything's on Spotify. But
they just repressed the original Getz Gilberto.
Oh, really?
On 45 RPM on vinyl, and it is unbelievable. I listened.
Really?
It's quieter than a CD. It's unbelievable.
What's the song? I know he's known for "Girl from Ipanema." The song.
Desafinado.
Yeah, with the wrong, it's about the playing the wrong note, right?
Yeah. that's one note samba. But yeah. You got Desafinado, Corcovado.
Yeah, I love that music.
The sound on that record is so good.
Yeah, yeah.
This podcast, we've matriculated it to something fun.
I know. Now it's a music podcast. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know, look how many Ansel Adams play piano. Scott Kelby plays piano, guitar, drums. Tony Sweet is a drummer. Tony Corbell.
Hey, Tony, if you listen to this, don't take it personal, but drummers, no. I give him a bad time. Tony's a great guy. I love Tony. We got to get Tony on, too.
Yeah.
We should have like an all-musician podcast, John. We should get all these guys on.
That'd be fun.
You know? We could have like the all...
Yeah. You know, we've talked about that.
Photography workshop quintet.
Rick, you know, we've talked about that in the past with others. Just the correlation between music and photography and just this act and sense of creation is very similar.
Well, you know what it is if you're playing a jazz tune, you've got the saw, okay?
Yeah.
Which is what you're looking at. And then you do whatever you do, and then you blow on it. You play jazz on it. And when you create a photograph, you're taking that song and interpreting it to what you want it, the story you want to tell. So it's very, the correlation is amazing, you know, and that's why, you know, so many musicians, and we could keep going, there's quite a few, have turned into be good photographers, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know that, I always do tell people, what we do, when we're taking a photograph, compared to becoming a concert pianist
it's easy.
Believe me, what we're doing is really easy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I used to be able to play, believe it or not. I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston, and although I was studying jazz there, we played classical. I used to be able to play Prelude in C sharp minor by Rachmaninoff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had big hands, so I could play it because I have big hands. Dun, dun, and he would do this. Yeah. Actually, he would write songs that were really hard for other people to play. He like put these big stretches in there. Yeah. So,
yeah, yeah. But no, it's just that the correlation is amazing. Yeah. And I think you have to use, you have to, you know, there was a consortium they did at, I believe, MIT, somewhere up there. I don't think it was Harvard. It was MIT. And they took like a bunch of jazz guys, Matheny was in there, a bunch of jazz guys, and then a bunch of classical guys and some other, and they found out that a jazz player or some of the rock players that improvise, they're one of the few people in creative environments that are able to use both sides of their brain at the, same time. There's very few people who have, you know, perfected that, and it falls into that musician thing. And I think photographers have to do that. I mean, you have to use both sides of your brain, and it's hard.
That's a good, very, very good. I never thought of that, but that is an excellent point.
And it's practice. We go back to practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hate to beat a dead horse, folks. Yeah. But how many people do you see that come on a workshop that haven't held a camera in 2 months?
Or show up with a new camera in a box.
Or a brand new camera.
Yeah.
I love it.
You have to practice. You can't. Yeah. You know, Bill Fortney tells a story that somebody walked up after one of his talks and said, "I love your work and I love the way you teach. Can you mentor me?" And Bill said, "How old are you?" And I think he said, "I'm 80 years old." And Bill says, "You don't have the time." And it wasn't negative, but, you know, everything in creativity and art, I don't care if it's cooking or writing or whatever, it's a factor of time.
Yeah.
And you have to have the time to practice.
Well, that's the whole idea of Outliers, right? The book Outliers.
Yeah.
The 10,000 hours.
Yeah, and that's about what it is. Mm-hmm. By the way, 10,000 hours is 50 weeks a year, 2 weeks off, at 40 hours a week. So that's
a lot of practice.
I did the math. It's 10,000.
That's good. Good for you, Jack.
10,000 hours. What can we tell the folks that we can help to contribute to the, I always say the Rick Salmon retirement fund, but he'll retire, so
he's,
I don't
not
know.
Gonna retire.
Well, thank you very much. Just Rick Salmon, S-A-M-M-O-N, ricksalmon.com. And if they want to check out the iPhone site, it's the iPhoneExperience.com. And, they could just Google me. I'll show up.
Folks, get that book on making money. I'm telling you. He has done the legwork for you. He tells you how to do this. It's like a recipe. You can spend 10,000 hours doing this. He's done it for you. I'm telling you, it's amazing.
Well, thank you.
Well, yeah, John, I think any old business?
No, I think we've hit all the topics that I wanted to cover today, Rick. It's just been a joy having you on. Thank you.
Yeah, we got to do this again. And maybe this idea, maybe we get Tony on.
I love that idea. Yeah, have a Zoom thing.
Yeah, we can have some other people. We can sit around and talk about.
Yeah, let's get Scott back on and
get Scott Kelby on too, because
we've had Scott on.
You get him back, and it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We'll give that project to Jack. Give him something to do.
Okay,
pull that together.
But didn't John Barkley? I forget what he played. He's another guy that plays. I think he's another guitar player, and I think he's quite a good one.
Yeah, I think so.
So we'll work on that. It's going to be hard to find, Rick. It's going to be hard to find a bass player.
I play bass.
Oh, you do?
Oh, I have a Fender jazz bass. That's what I play most now. That's why I like bossa nova. Bossa nova. It's the root and the fifth, mostly.
It is.
And the right? And the ghost notes. You know the ghost notes.
Yeah.
Playing the ghost notes is the key. I think when I was studying bass, when someone said, tell me about the ghost notes, he said, okay, if you learn how to play ghost notes, you could send the drummer home. Because you get that, you get that percussion in there.
Yeah. So, it's a little sound. Well, listen, it's good having you.
Thank you.
When we're done, Rick, don't leave. I have to talk to you for a minute.
Okay.
Folks, if you have any questions, comments, whatever you want to do, it's at wetalkphoto@gmail.com. And until next time, John, be careful up in the Olympic Peninsula.
You betcha.
I hear Sasquatches out. So
it is. You bet.
It is.
All right, folks. Well, thanks for listening. Rick, thank you for being here, and I hope everybody has a great day.